Good morning, Steve Dale's Pet World on WGN. We're going to be talking about a serious topic, the end of life, but let's first talk about the beginning of life. I am told that Dr. Marty Greer grew up listening to WGN radio. Of course, Dr. Greer, you're not alone. That's not why you're on the show only. You're on the show because you authored a book that's out called Your Pandemic Puppy. And I've talked to Anna DeVlanta so many times about this very issue, and she's called it that, the pandemic puppy. And what we love, Dr. Greer, both Anna DeVlantis and myself, are some of the names these dogs are being given, like Pan for pandemic. Well, I don't know that I love that. Would you want to name your dog that? Or there's lots of dogs and cats, for that matter, that are being named Fauci. So have you noted where you are in southern Wisconsin, near the border of Illinois and Wisconsin, that people are also naming their pandemic puppies after something like, you know, that they're doing their, during the pandemic, maybe tequila? I don't know. Have you noted that?
Yeah. There's a little bit of entertainment value that goes along with that. And that's one of my favorite questions when I meet a new pet is, how did they get their name? Because they're always a great story with that.
How long have you been practicing veterinary medicine?
40 years.
Wow.
I can't even believe it.
Wow. And your husband, you said, grew up listening to WGN radio, which is wonderful. Now, in those 40 years, you could not have predicted, I can't imagine, that in the year 2020, everything is going to turn upside down. But the real winners, and I think they've been winners, are, you wrote about the pandemic puppy, but I did cats into this too, that adoptions have gone through the roof throughout much of the country.
They have, and it's been great for the dogs. The shelters have been emptied by people putting dogs into foster care, and foster cares have been emptied by dogs going into forever homes. It's been tremendous for the dogs. Although I will say at the beginning of the pandemic, we were seeing dogs for kind of minor reasons. People would come in and say, my dog is having four stools a day. I'd be like, okay, how many walks a day are you giving? Well, we used to do one, but now we're doing four. I'm like, well, we can probably do the math on this one. And they didn't even realize that, you know, because they went for a walk and then their husband went for a walk and then they took the kids for a walk. That poor dog was like exhausted.
So when you adopt, we assume adopt from a shelter or a rescue, that pandemic puppy or adult dog for that matter, you write a lot in the book, Your Pandemic Puppy, about socialization. What is that and why is that so important? Why did you spend so much space, and I'm glad you did, writing about it?
Sure. And socialization is really important. Some of the rescue dogs have come through some pretty tough situations. They've been born into situations without knowing exactly what their history is. Their parents weren't screened for behavior or health. They were tossed around in different living facilities while they were growing up and being transported. So it's been really rough, especially on the rescue dogs and the dogs in foster care. They are the ones that really have suffered the most. So it's been difficult, and because you can't take them out and do the things you normally would, we didn't have dog training classes, and we couldn't take them to the park, and there were a lot of things that we couldn't do during the early parts of the pandemic that these dogs weren't getting the social experiences that they needed, and that makes them the loser, because if they're not social with people, with other dogs, with other family members, it's really not good for their long-term well-being in your home.
And even now, you know, so a lot of the dog training classes, at least in Chicago, are being held outdoors, even in the cold. That makes sense for safety. I understand that. And people have to be socially distanced from one another. I understand that. But the dogs don't need to be. In fact, you don't necessarily want them socially distanced from one another. However, the good news is you have a 6-foot leash. Most leashes are 6 feet, so it's easy to gauge how far away you are from that person. But having said that, It's concerning to me anyway that the dogs don't get an opportunity now necessarily, or the same opportunities they had, say, if you adopted a dog 2 years ago.
Right. So we're hoping that people can find some kind of a play group that they are safe, feeling that their pets are good with the other pets, and you're safe with those people. So there may be people in your neighborhood or in your church group or some other social activity that you can do that you can get together at places that are outdoors or large enough that you can socially distance, but the dogs can still have that interaction with each other, because it's really important that they play with each other, that they learn those play skills. A lot of dogs that come into homes have never been taught to play with a tennis ball or to play with each other, and they don't understand possessiveness. There's a lot of small things that we don't really think are a big thing, but they turn out to be big things if the dogs don't have those life skills.
For a puppy, or for that matter, I will ask also for an adult dog. How much of an advocate are you of crate training? I know you are because I read the book, Your Pandemic Puppy.
Right. And I do think that there's a lot of value in a crate. Now, it has to be used appropriately. Just storing a dog in a crate isn't a good way to house them long term. But there are going to be times that you have to have the dog someplace safe, that they're not going to chew up an electric cord, or they're not going to knock over a candle, or they're not going to do something when you're gone that's inappropriate. We see dogs that swallow socks and towels and underwear and baby pacifiers and all kinds of things. So if the dog can't be in a puppy-safe environment, a crate is really a good choice.
Yeah. You know what? My favorite line in the book is this, of all things. Training happens every day, everywhere. It can be in the kitchen as your puppy waits for you as you cut up vegetables for dinner. It could be next to the couch while you watch TV. It can be during bath time with your kids or under your work desk as you're on a call even. Training happens anytime the puppy has an experience she learns from, whether she learns the skill from that you wanted or learns a skill you never meant for her to assimilate. Why do you think that is? I'm going to ask you to read my mind, but it's, you know, light reading. I bet you can. Why do you think that is my favorite line in the whole book?
Because I think it's the one thing that people overlook the most, is they don't realize that the things your dog just learned is what they just learned. You know, if you're paying attention to the Zoom call and you're not paying attention to what the puppy's doing under your desk, I actually had a client that was on a Zoom call and her puppy did some pretty horrifying behaviors, and I'm sure her facial features showed it on her Zoom call, but she was left in front of the computer, so the puppy got away with some things that she ordinarily would have been able to interrupt, redirect, and fix the problem. So puppies are learning everything. Every time you give them an experience, they just learned it, and it may not be exactly what you meant to teach them.
And I think they're learning, and this is true in my view, you tell me what you think, even for 15-year-old dogs, you know?
Oh,
they,
yes.
Yeah, they're learning all the time.
Yes. Yeah, they don't stop learning just because they become 15. They may learn differently. They may have a harder time remembering things, but they're still learning. And if they figure out that you put the groceries down and ran back out to the car for the next load, they learned that they could get into the grocery bag while you were out. They learn in a heartbeat, and that's so positively reinforced unintentionally because they just grabbed the loaf of bread and took off with it. They just learned something really important,
well,
but not what you meant.
If there's one lesson from the book, Your Pandemic Puppy, very quickly, what would that be?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question. To select well, to take the time before you adopt a dog or a puppy from whatever source, the shelter or wherever you end up going to, that you select a dog that is going to be someone that works into your lifestyle long term, that 15 years from now you still see yourself with that dog.
Well put. Your Pandemic Puppy, Dr. Marty Greer, Finding and Adjusting a Well-Adjusted Dog During COVID-19. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Dr. Mary Gardner is a veterinarian who is everywhere. If you're at a veterinary conference, you will see her because she's at every veterinary conference ever on the planet. And there's a reason for that. Not only is she an extraordinary communicator, she is also the co-founder of an organization called Lap of Love. And in her wheelhouse are older animals. And as the human-animal bond has become what it has become, our pets are members of the family. We care for them so very much. But I wonder if toward the end of life, we have caretaker fatigue, Dr. Gardner, where we are caretaking, literally like we might for a person in some ways, for our animals. Mm-hmm. And if there's a psychological exhaustion that can happen because of that.
Absolutely. So, yes, and there's actually been studies about this on caregiver stress, caregiver fatigue. You know, all those names, it's just a lot of work sometimes. And not everybody could understand how hard it is that someone might be going through, or the struggles that someone might be going through with an elder pet. So I have helped, you know, thousands of families, over the last decade with geriatric care. But I think the the thing that stood out the most is when I've had to take care of my own, because that's when I can really empathize and go through all the struggles. And I've had every dog or cat go through every disease possible, from kidney failure to cognitive dysfunction to cancer to mobility. And let me tell you, it's hard. And so I'm dealing right now with my own 14-year-old dog. Her name is Sam, and she's got cancer in her spine, so her mobility is decreasing every single day. Mm-hmm. It's also leading to fecal incontinence, which is not welcome really in the house.
Yeah.
So I called myself the poop chaser the other day, like the storm chaser.
Well, do you think that sometimes, so where one family member is like, okay, I'm going to do this, and maybe even do it past the point of what that person should be doing, where another family member says, you know what? We're way past the time where we should be doing something about this for the sake of the pet. And people are not in agreement with one another.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So this is where I say that, you know, when is time, you know, that whole big question, that's really a very big subjective time period. And I say that when any pet has a terminal illness that will take their life in, you know, less than 6 months, or they're in hospice, or their old geriatric ailments are decreasing their quality of life, you know, so much that it's not good. At any time, I put them in the subjective time period, which is also what I call the roller coaster, because now you're in a roller coaster time. Mm-hmm. And at any time, I support a family to say goodbye. So if they must get through the night with 8 hours sleep and their dog is not allowing that, I support their decision to say goodbye. On the complete opposite end, I have some people that are sleeping with their dog in their living room and getting up every 30 minutes. I sleep in my living room with my dog right now, because if she falls or gets stuck, she cries for me. So I'm right there. And I have many friends that would say, I would have let Sam go. And some of these are vet friends. I would have let Sam go weeks ago. But for me, I'm okay doing this for her right now. There are not everybody in my household would not. So this is also, arguments happen. The primary caregiver could be the one that goes longer than other people in the house. It could also be that the primary caregiver wants to end it sooner because they are the ones giving all of the care. But man, the studies that have shown about caregiving in the pet space show that the stress that a caregiver goes through is the same stress that caregivers of human, patients go through. So depression, anxiety, withdrawal, like all these things, anger. So you can really go through it. And I get the anxiety. I get it myself. So I can empathize so much.
Maybe that's your next book.
It's definitely a chapter in the book, because it's a lot. And I think we forget, you know, I'm on a lot of Facebook groups, which are very good to help support families that mm-hmm. have a specific disease, right? So there's one on Cushing's disease. It's a Facebook group. There's one for blind dogs. I'm on that one. I'm in so many as a pet owner with these dogs or cats, this thing. And it's wonderful, but you see the comments that some of them are making, like, for 2 years now, he hasn't slept through the night. Or I come home and there's pee all over, or what, you know, whatever it may be. And us as veterinarians don't always appreciate that or understand. We're not told that, right? So you know, I don't want to say cut your vet some slack, but tell them what's going on, right? Yeah. Like if you're at your wit's end, but we can also help, you know, and give you some tips around the house and things like that. But I feel my heart goes out to people when they're dealing with this. The other pressure that we have is the euthanasia, you know, decision. So then there's guilt behind that, where they're like, well, yeah, I could sleep with my dog in the living room, which is fine. But if I don't, that means I have to euthanize him. And isn't that a miserable, aren't I a miserable person
for
thinking about
those euthanasia decisions are tough decisions to make, for sure. And all individual, maybe there's no right or wrong. Kind of a sad thing, but I want to get around to the fact that in some ways, it isn't. Dr. Gardner, the question you get every day, I'm sure, I mean, you're looking at bananas at the grocery store. People probably stop you and say, how do I know when it's time?
I do get that question actually all the time, even at the food store by the bananas. and my answer is, there's not just one specific moment. You also can't just think, oh, when he stops eating, I'll know in this time, or things like that, because it really depends on a few factors. So when I'm helping a family with this decision, I'm first going to look at the ailments that they're facing. So, you know, if they're dealing with cancer or mobility issues or cognitive issues, and how long may they live with these problems, right? Also, how will they die from these problems? And that is really important. Some people forget about that, is if I've got a pet that has heart failure, that may die from drowning in their lung fluid, that is a very different conversation than a cat that's got cognitive dysfunction that's just keeping everybody up at 2 o'clock in the morning. So the ailment really helps guide my conversation. So obviously that can be very varied. Another thing is, you know, the family's beliefs, you know, what they believe they'd want to continue to do with their pet, very different. I mean, Steve, you and I might have different ideas, or we're right in the same boat. Like, we would probably put the cat in a papoose and carry him around. I don't know. But the other thing are budgets. And there are four budgets in life. And I love this because I think it really helps me as a veterinarian, me as a human being, to know that not everybody has the same budget of availability. And there's a financial budget. So can they financially care for their pet? Whether it's medications needed, whether it's a harness needed. You know, my harness was $100 for my dog. That's a lot of money to some people. For me, it's been the best $100 I've ever spent on a harness.
I want to know what kind of harness that is. Okay, there's the monetary.
Oh, I know. There's my favorite harness. So there's the monetary budget. There's a time budget. Taking care of them is tough. And this is where caregiver burden comes into play. You know, a lot of us are working from home, so we're home a little bit more, which is nice. But when we're back to normal life, you might be going, you know, you might be going to work for 10 hours a day, and you can't leave your pet that long, right? And so because of your work, you may have to decide to euthanize sooner than later because you can't be home to care for them. And that's okay. Like, don't have guilt about that. This is, you know, taking care of your family and your life. Another budget is a physical budget. Can you physically lift your dog? Can you physically lift your cat to give him sub-Q fluids? You know, my mother had both her hips replaced. She couldn't get on the ground to pick up her dog's incontinence. Right?
And what's the final one?
The final one is the emotional budget. Are we emotionally able to handle this? So it's a big conversation that I could squeeze into a few minutes at the banana stand, but way better in person and very customized.
How important is bringing in your veterinarian who knows you, knows your pet, into this decision?
So it is very important because they know also that they should, if you've brought them in, know the medical issues that's going on. But what I think is so important is for you to be open and honest with what is going on in the home. So many times families don't tell us when they bring them into the clinic. And when we see your pet, they may be acting normal, but we don't know that they're up at night at the edge of your bed, panting and pacing and keeping you up at night. You have to tell us all the problems that are going on so we can really help you with the situation and help make the best decision.
All right. Well, and that best decision can be different for you than, say, your next door neighbor. And it doesn't mean 100%. You're right or wrong, or your neighbor's right or wrong.
Correct. This is all very subjective. There is no right or wrong. Just, you know what? Just make the end as good as it can be.
All right. That's what euthanasia means, literally, just about. Dr. Mary Gardner, as always, thank you so very much.
You're very welcome.
I am so honored later this afternoon on my Steve Dale's Other World program, right here on WGN 720. You will have an opportunity, as will I, this is really special, to wish Dr. Lester Fisher, former director of the Lincoln Park Zoo, who I grew up watching on TV. Remember when Ray Rayner was on the Ark in the Park segment? Was Dr. Lester Fisher, and he talked about zoo animals, and I grew up watching him. Ultimately wrote a book that he was included in. He wrote a book that I was included in. I worked at the Lincoln Park Zoo for a while. His 100th birthday. We will have an opportunity to wish him 100 years. I mean, isn't that amazing? He's now living in Wisconsin with his daughter and son-in-law. We'll talk with Dr. Fisher later this afternoon. It'll be such an honor. And you'll have an opportunity to do so, too. 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text. As always, any questions or memories you may have, He'll talk about everything from escaped gorillas to a bear that was once found in a local bar. He'll explain what that's all about. That's this afternoon right here on WGN, and we'll talk to you next week on Steve Dale's Pet World, bright and early.